Welcome into Words with Wallace. I'm your host, Nick Wallace. Coming at you, it is Thursday, June 12th, and we have an NBA final series on our hands. The Indiana Pacers are up 2-1 in the NBA finals. I didn't see this coming. I'm sure none of you saw this coming. Everyone and their mother picked OKC in 5. That shit's out the window. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen next. I am completely and utterly bought in to this NBA Finals series, and I hope you guys are as well. It's been a lot of fun to watch, starting with the incredible comeback of the Indiana Pacers in Game 1, put them in the driver's seat of this series, then OKC. They get right. They bounce back in Game 2 of a very comfortable win at home, and then Indiana, in relatively shocking fashion, again, just dominates the fourth quarter over the Oklahoma City Thunder, proves that Game 1 is not a fluke and that they belong here. And if anybody is telling you that they know what's going to happen next, then they are lying to you, man. I just take anything you knew before this series, crumple it up, throw it out. We need to talk all about the NBA Finals. So was very excited to watch Game 3, like throughout, at home in front of the big screen last night. Was on the road in Nashville for my guy Jordan for Games 1 and 2, which was a lot of fun. Had a blast out there, wouldn't change a damn thing, but frankly, wasn't really sucked in as I would have been if I was just like outright watching the game at home, just trying to watch it at a bar and at an airport and things of that nature. So obviously caught up, watched everything from Game 1 and Game 2, but mainly in this podcast today, wanted to give my reaction to the incredible game last night in Game 3. So my plan was originally to record with my guy Ian Kayanja, who you guys might remember from previous podcast appearances. He's a massive Thunder fan, and we are still going to bring him on Saturday after tomorrow's game, so it's going to be a pretty quick turnaround between episodes. But frankly, Game 3 was just such a surprise and such an incredible game from start to finish that I wanted to dust off the mic. I had nothing to do on this fine Thursday night, so figured I would give you guys a pod to tell you exactly what's happened in the NBA Finals so far. If we can try to predict anything moving forward, I guess I can take a swing at that, but frankly, I don't know shit, so I don't know why you'd listen to me in the first place. But let's start off with Game 1 and just quickly recap how we got here at this point in the NBA Finals, right? It starts off with the 15-point comeback, which honestly, I mean, it was a great game, incredible comeback by OKC. They've been doing this all playoffs long, but frankly, it wasn't as dramatic of a comeback as kind of what we've come to expect in this NBA playoffs so far. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm being a hater or nitpicking or anything like that, but 15 points in the modern NBA, especially with how prevalent the three-point shooting is, like, you can lose that lead in a matter of minutes, like really a few minutes, and that's kind of what happened to OKC in that game. But it's really shocking because OKC is just so well set up to not blow a lead like that. Like, they really have the perfect design team where their defense is unbelievable, right? It's hard enough to get any baskets on them whatsoever, let alone stringing together consecutive baskets on such a young and athletic team. And then on the other end of the court, you just have this guy that's completely and utterly unguardable. Even with Shea struggling for the most part last night, like, he still put up 24 points and had some baskets that were honestly amazing. Like, I've just been so impressed with Shea so far in this NBA Finals. And so they're really the last team you would expect to blow a lead like that. Like, if you allow me to make a football analogy, they're kind of like the Eagles, right? Like, a good team in football that has a good defense and knows how to run the ball, like, once they get up in games, just forget about it, right? I feel like OKC is like the basketball version of that. And just some other little tidbits here, right? Like, obviously, I feel like everyone's talking about the Haliburton shot, how clutch he's been, and rightfully so. Like, this run of playoff game winners is just unheard of for any player. And then when you factor in that he's really a pass-first guy, right? He's not a dominant scorer. He has some games where he has single-digit scoring nights in the playoffs, and I don't want to come across as a hater, but the fact that it's not like your traditional, like, isolation, I'm going to square you up and just drop 25 every night, not that type of guy. He's more of like a pass-first player, and he's the one that just seems to find the ball in all these clutch moments is insane. And so everybody just kind of thinks back to that Haliburton kind of weird pull-up jumper to win the game, and deservedly so in Game 1. It was a game winner in the NBA Finals, but man, that four-piece combo that Andrew Nembhard had on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with just a couple minutes left in the game was so fucking cold, man. I can't believe Nembhard is just at the point where he has the confidence. All these Pacers players play with such confidence that he's like, yep, I got the MVP guarding me 25 feet from the basket. I'm just gonna just four-piece in his eye, step back three. Like, the confidence that these guys play with is insane. So I just wanted to shout that out. I didn't see enough love for the Nembhard combo on my timeline, so I just wanted to shout that out. And then honestly, the last play in particular, again, the Haliburton jump shot here, I didn't see a lot of people talking about how, to my eyes, looked like it could have been some sort of defensive miscommunication on the part of Alex Caruso and then Cason Wallace, who was obviously the primary defender in that situation. It looked like as time was winding down for like a half second that Caruso was going to kind of show some help and that he was going to maybe do like a double, which I guess hindsight's 20/20, right? But it certainly looks like he should have made the double team and forced Halliburton to pass. Obviously, again, Halliburton's a great passer, so you didn't want to leave Siakam or whoever that was for like a wide open lane to the basket at that point. But it's just really tough to execute like a pass, a catch, and a finish with less than 3 seconds on the clock. So hindsight's 20/20. I feel like Caruso should have doubled, and it almost felt like Wallace, I guess we'll never know, it felt like he let up for a half second because maybe he thought Caruso was coming over, so he didn't want to risk closing out even harder and maybe fouling Halliburton in that situation. But just something that I noticed. I didn't see a lot of people talking about it, so let me know if I'm crazy on that. Moving on to game two, obviously this one was a comfortable win for OKC. I mean, that team is basically impossible to beat when their bench is locked in like that. And frankly, it hasn't been the best playoffs in the world for Aaron Wiggins, a guy who was really important for the Thunder during the regular season. Like, he had some crazy scoring stretches. I think he had a 40-point game at one point, and he was awesome in game two. He chipped in 18. Caruso had 20. I mean, when those guys are shooting like 50% from three, forget about it. They're just completely and utterly unbeatable. And then when you layer in the fact that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had an incredible game in game two, definitely his best game of the finals, like, you didn't really need Chet to be all that locked in, even though he did play better in game two. You didn't need Jalen Williams. He didn't have the best game two. Like, the Thunder just aren't going to lose that situation when you got, you know, basically 40 points between Caruso and Aaron Wiggins. Looking at Indiana in game two, I will just say that a lot of flack was probably taken by Tyrese Halliburton just for the lack of aggression early in that game and the lack of shots that he took. Honestly, the five turnovers that Halliburton had in that game were probably worse than anything else, just because it is such a high standard to hold him to. But the fact that guy averages, you know, double-digit assists in the regular season and 8-9 assists in the playoffs and still only regularly records between 1 and 2 turnovers a game, when he has 5 and a couple of those he's just mishandling the ball, and then, you know, a couple of those turnovers are easy layups for OKC the other way, like, that is just something a Pacers team who is, they are outright a less talented team than the Thunder. They cannot survive mistakes like that from their best player. And that brings us to the game last night, game 3, an awesome game from start to finish. It did look like OKC was going to take control of this one early. Then there was a massive run by Indiana in the late first, early second quarter due to mainly the play of TJ McConnell. I think Indy had like a 4-point lead heading into halftime, and that was immediately squandered by like a big run for the OKC Thunder when they came out of halftime. I think they had like 9 straight points. Took Indy a while to get their first bucket of the second half, but it was really the fourth quarter when the game got super interesting. OKC had the lead early, then Indiana made a nice run, took control of the game. You were just kind of waiting for OKC and Shai to kind of go crazy and find a way to pull out a really tight game in game three, but it just never happened. The Pacers were too good, an incredible game from Benedict Mathurin as well. I would say that him and TJ McConnell are probably the headliners of this game. Like, the play of those two off the bench was just too much for OKC to handle. And if I had to put a third guy on that poster of game three, it would have to be Obi Toppin, just for the energy plays that he made. But let's dive into the weeds a little bit more on game three, and especially Benedict Mathurin. Let's start there. He was the leading scorer of, I believe, the entire game. He had 27 points on a super efficient 9 of 12 shooting. And the highlight here was the 10 points in the fourth quarter as well. Mathurin's a really unique player. I mean, I loved him early on in his rookie year. He's just a stone-cold scorer. He's really fearless out there. He's been fearless from his first day in the NBA, and I didn't watch him a lot at Arizona, but people said the same of him during his time in college. And frankly, he doesn't really fit the Pacers style as well as the other guys, right? He is a little bit more of a ball stopper. He is more of a traditional isolation scorer, but something about him, you know, his athleticism, the pace that he plays at, like, he is a really tough cover for the OKC Thunder right now. We'll see if they make any adjustments for those Mathurin minutes. It's not like they have like a really set matchup for him when he checks into the games, but Mark Daigneault might have to start thinking about a special plan for Benedict Mathurin, just with how comfortable he looked out there, especially in game three. And we do see this all the time where role players and guys that aren't every night type of stars like step up in big spots, especially when they have the home crowd behind them. So maybe this game ends up being an anomaly, but he did look pretty solid in some of the minutes earlier on in this series. And just, again, he has that type of ability. I think he's had 40-point games in the league before, and last night was easily the most important game of his career, and especially with the 10 points in the fourth quarter, when buckets were hard to come by, especially by the OKC Thunder, the fact that you have a bench guy stepping in there and just drilling jumpers, getting to the lane, hard takes to the basket, all the confidence in the world out there, you really can't nitpick any part of Benedict Mathurin's game last night. And then TJ McConnell, especially like that run I was talking about earlier, late in the first quarter, early in the second quarter. I mean, this guy had five steals, and three of them were off of inbounds plays. Like, I know he's known to do this before, like him and Jose Alvarado, that's kind of their move. The fact that they are pressuring guys 94 feet, and they are pesky. They can hide behind guys, kind of jump out in front of inbounds plays. But to have three mental lapses in the NBA Finals is fucking absurd, right? He finishes the game with five steals. The one play in particular of all the great TJ McConnell plays last night that stood out was one play early in the second quarter where he steals an inbounds pass, right? Then he throws like a really nice pass to an open shooter, and then Siakam misses the jumper. TJ grabs the rebound, gets an offensive rebound, and then just immediately hits Mathurin with a touch pass. He's cutting to the basket, and they get an easy layup out of it. So an ultimate momentum swing. The crowd was completely rabid during that time. He also chipped in 10 points and 5 assists. I mean, this guy was huge in the Knicks series, so you kind of knew he was going to have a good game, especially, again, with that home crowd behind him. But again, wasn't the only role player to step up. Obi Toppin at this point, I just can't believe the player that he's turned into. Like, he's now like a uber athletic wing, but you can also kind of play him at like a small ball five spot. And oh yeah, by the way, he hit five threes in game one and also plays great defense. He had two major blocks. I think both of those came in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday. And then to round it all out, you had really solid, borderline great games from Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam. I don't mean to nitpick here. I would say that, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, that's like an 8 out of 10 game for both of those guys. Like, they were both really solid, you know, basically put up exactly their playoff averages. A couple more rebounds for Halliburton. He did put up nearly a triple-double. I mean, those guys were great. But again, when you're playing a team as talented as the OKC Thunder, you usually need one of those two guys to go kind of crazy in order to win those games. But you didn't need that with the insane production that you were able to get off the bench. And inversely, OKC didn't get much of anything going off their bench. And it's just really interesting to see that a team like Indiana, again, we talked about it before this finals matchup, just having such a unique style, the fact that they've been able to stick to their guns and play their game despite playing easily the league's best defense and playing a team that athletically is far superior to any team that Indiana has played so far. Like, they're still getting a bunch of easy looks just by pushing the ball after made baskets, right? Not even like transition opportunities off of a miss or off of a turnover. Like, any team can convert those, but really it's only Indiana that's taking made baskets, and then it's like a, you know, 40-foot outlet pass, and then somebody's wide open, and then it's, you know, a quick dump off for a layup, and then boom, like 2 points go on the other way before the team that just scored realizes what happened. And then even late in game, there were a few examples of, you know, traps that like the Celtics and other teams that have blown leads have fallen into, where they get a little three happy, offense gets a little stagnant, they're waiting till the end of the shot clock, they're not getting as quality of looks as what they were getting early in the game. Indy was in a spot where it's really tough to maintain a lead against the Thunder as well, and they continued to stick to their guns. They got great shots. There was an opportunity for the dagger at the end of the game where I believe it was Halliburton grabbed a rebound, and he easily could have dribbled it out, tried to burn some clock there. Instead, he chucks it all the way down the court, has Pascal Siakam there with only Shai Gilgeous-Alexander back, and that is the strength of Pascal Siakam's game, right? He's so dangerous in transition. He can score over nearly anybody, and Shai really doesn't have much of a chance in that matchup. And Carlisle is pushing all the right buttons with this Pacers team. Like, we talked about the depth of OKC. That's been their strength all year long. And I knew Indiana had good depth, but the fact that they are actually 10 deep and he needs all of those guys, besides maybe he can do without the Thomas Bryant minutes now that it's been shown that Obi's, you know, pretty productive at the five, but it's insane. Like, you need every single guy. And the fact that I think there was a big stretch in the game yesterday where he left Pascal Siakam out of the game, and, you know, trying to manage those Halliburton versus McConnell minutes is always kind of interesting. And, you know, he's been perfect in this series, at least as far as I can tell, just sitting on the couch. And on the other side of the court, I don't mean to make this too narrative, like, hey, like, one team won and their coach is good, the other team lost and their coach is bad. But I do just kind of wonder if Coach Dagnall on the OKC side is getting exposed a little bit, right? I mean, OKC's offense down the stretch in that game, they were a team, again, I thought they were kind of bulletproof when it came to late game offense just because of how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is. But it felt like at times they might be in need of like a true point guard just to run a set, just to get a good look outside of just like, hey, Shai, here's the ball, like, have it 20 feet from the basket, try to get to the mid-range and bail us out. But it just kind of did seem like a little bit of a your turn, my turn situation for the Thunder down the stretch. And, you know, it did seem like after timeouts, they did a better job at getting into their offense, getting into a set play. And, you know, they got better looks because of that. But ultimately, it was pretty surprising to see this OKC team struggle so much down the stretch when they do have a guy that's been proven to be unguardable this entire playoff run. A lot of turnovers in that game, too, for OKC. It's just going to be tough for them to win when they do lose that turnover battle. That's not something that they're used to seeing. And just a few other parting thoughts on Game 3 as a whole. Like, I know that this was Shea's worst game of the NBA Finals comfortably. I think he finished the game with, like, 24 points. I know he had 6 turnovers. I did watch back the turnovers just to make sure, because I knew he had a couple that I remember. You know, a couple of them were, like, pick sixes that just immediately turned into layups the other way for Indiana, which were terrible. I think he traveled at least once, maybe twice as well. But I will say, one of those turnovers, he literally, like, got a really nice block and technically had position before stepping out of bounds. But really, one of those turnovers shouldn't count. And I just felt like overall that he played a lot better than what the stats showed. I mean, OKC was doubling him quite a bit more than what I could tell in games 1 or 2. I don't have the advanced numbers for that. But there were still so many baskets that he got that he just, you know, such difficult shots where he's beating one guy off the dribble, then he's splitting two bigs and he's finishing over a guy at the rim. And it's like, those are just such impossible shots for nearly anybody else. And he makes them look routine. And especially when there isn't a second guy going. I know Jalen Williams finished the game with 26 points. I felt like watching the game, he wasn't as impactful as what the box score showed. So I did just want to give Shea, you know, a crumb of credit there, because I do think he's asked to do so much for that team. And Indiana is making some progress on how to defend him as the series is going on. Other random thoughts. I was cool with there not being a flagrant foul on Aaron Nesmith when he wrapped up Alex Caruso on a fast break layup. I thought the play was stupid. Like, I almost felt like he deserved the flagrant just because of how dumb of a play it was. Like, he got really lucky it wasn't a flagrant foul, even though he was able to wrap him up cleanly, because there was just so much ground between him and Caruso that he had to cover. And ultimately, ball didn't lie. Caruso took a really hard fall, but he made both free throws. I do think the refs got it right by not calling that a flagrant. And just overall, that game, it fucking ruled, man. From start to finish, I was completely enthralled. I did not know what was going to happen. I'm so glad that 2 out of these 3 games so far has been really close. It's really all you can ask for in an NBA Finals matchup, at least as a casual fan. I'm really entertained by what we've seen so far. And I'm not somebody that really wants the Pacers to win, right? I think if you asked me before this series, I definitely would have said OKC. I'm starting to get bought in by these, like, you know, demon magic Pacers, what they got going on. I just have no idea what's going to happen next. So let's move on and talk about what to expect the rest of this NBA Finals. And if you ask me, I really have no fucking clue. Like, I'd love to sit here and tell you, hey, I think OKC's going to bounce back, or hey, maybe Indiana's legit and they're just going to steamroll from here on out. I mean, you could really tell me anything, and I don't think I could be surprised at this point. I don't mean to be hyperbolic just because a team that we weren't expecting to win is up 2-1 in the series, but I think it's safe to say that Indiana belongs here. Like, they have proven that they are a championship level team, that they are very worthy to come out of the Eastern Conference, and they're giving OKC a real run for their money. Now, gun to my head, I'm still picking OKC. If I pick them to win in 5 games, I'd expect them to be able to pull this out. It is hard for me to believe that OKC would just rattle off 3 games in a row right now as well. Like, I feel like the most logical scenario, if I really had to pick, would probably be OKC in 7. Just because, again, I just think these teams right now, at least with what we've seen in the first 3 games, are too close to assume either team's going to rattle off 3 straight. And so with that in mind, I've just never been more wrong about a team ever than what I have about the Indiana Pacers. I'll own it that I had them losing to the Bucks in round 1. I certainly wouldn't have expected them to beat Cleveland in round 2. Even in the series against the Knicks, I think I picked Knicks in 7. Like, I've just been wrong about this team every step of the way for 2 years now. I think I had them losing in round 1 last year when they went all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals then. I mean, there's just something special about this team, and they've proven by being in control this entire time, right? Like, OKC's never had a lead in this series, that it wasn't just a fluky game 1. But I guess the only thing that I can say with confidence, like, looking forward, is that if OKC goes out and loses game 4, which is definitely possible at this point in time, especially considering that game is in Indiana, if they lose game 4, they will not win the series. They are an incredible team, but frankly, I just don't think they have the mental strength to just survive and pull out 3 straight games against this Pacers team that's just fucking possessed. Like, what else can you say about them? Like, the Pacers have the utmost confidence they have all year long, and it's only growing with each win in this NBA Finals. Like, as much as I still think OKC has a great chance to win this series, like, I just, if they lose and go down 3-1, you'd think, hey, OKC's really talented. They're obviously a much better team on paper than Indiana. If any team can come back from a 3-1 deficit in the Finals, besides the 2016 Cavs, I think that OKC has a good chance. And sure, if you want to make that argument, that's fine. But I can't undervalue what we've seen from this Indiana Pacers team, and especially their aptitude in close games. Like, I'm not taking either team to win three straight games. So if OKC wants to have a chance in this series, I really think they need to even the score and have some momentum heading back to OKC for game five. So overall, I don't want to spend too much time on predictions, right? Like, game four is tomorrow. We're going to bring Ian on to talk about the results of that game on Saturday. So there's really no need to look ahead, and nobody's trusting what I say anymore. But did just want to get that on the record, that gun to my head, I am picking OKC in seven, but I really have no idea what's going to happen with this series. And I'm happy about it, man. I'm happy about the NBA Finals. I really just could not have been less excited about an NBA Finals, right? Especially with what I have set up with the podcast, the fact that I'm so invested in the NBA. Like, this is about as much of a bummer as I've seen since doing this pod, right? Like, it was a real bummer when I started this thing and the Celtics, you know, came all the way back from down 3-0 against the Heat just to lose in game seven, and Tatum got that injury. Like, that was horrible. That was a bummer. But I don't think I had real championship aspirations in that season. And then obviously last year was amazing. Heading into this year, I'm thinking we're going to win the whole thing. And now I got to sit here and watch an Indiana team that I really didn't enjoy the personality of all year long, and an OKC team that I just don't really want to see win because I'm just kind of envious of the position that they have over the next 10 years. Like, I'm not excited about either of these teams. And I didn't think it was going to be a competitive matchup either. Like, I thought it was a stretch to assume that Indiana was going to win a single game against OKC. That's why I picked them in five like everybody else. But this series was amazing, right? Like, last night was a game that Indy absolutely had to win, with their role players and TJ McConnell and Benedict Mathurin and Obi Toppin playing as well as they did at home. Like, that was a must-win game for them if they want to have a chance in this series. And they went out and they executed. And now we have a real series on our hands. The storylines, no matter how this goes, are absolutely unbelievable, right? They've sucked me in. Like, if Indiana pulls this thing off, this is arguably one of the most improbable NBA Finals run ever. And on the other side of the ball, an all-time disappointment for a 68-win OKC team that survived Denver, that made it out of the tougher Western Conference just to lose to a 4-seed. Like, that would be an insane scenario. And frankly, even if OKC pulls this off like everybody was thinking before the series, they're going to be a much tougher team for it. And they're going to be even better set up that they had to take all these playoff lumps and survive being down 0-1 to Indiana and then being down 2-1 to Indiana. Like, you know, they've grown up a lot in the playoffs so far, even in that series against Denver alone. And if they pull this off against Indiana, there'll be even more power to them moving forward. But frankly, it's not all good. You know, I don't want to just be Mr. Positive over here. I have to admit when things are worse than what they were previously. And, you know, honestly, just like seeing how many times the camera went to Reggie Miller last night, I get it. It's Indiana. He's courtside, just wearing an egregious fit, like just a fucking horrible fit. I mean, it was jersey, hoodie, but only the front of the jersey was tucked in to like denim jeans with the belt showing. I mean, I'm not a well-dressed guy. Like, I think I'm kind of middle of the road there. I think I somewhat know how to put some shit on from time to time. I'll get a fit off, right? But that was crazy. And especially like they're showing him every single time. I honestly, as much as I hate the Knicks fans, and I'm glad that they've gotten humbled, and we're going to talk more about the Knicks in a little bit, like, I almost felt bad for the Knicks because you know that they were sick of Reggie Miller just calling that entire Eastern Conference Finals series. Like, that was kind of a crazy move from the NBA to even allow that. And then you see the guy who was openly rooting against your team and hating on your team, you know, the previous six-game series, and then he's just courtside wearing the jersey. Like, obviously, it's no secret he's a Pacers fan. He's close with Halliburton, whatever. Like, I get all that. But, man, that was a tough sight for sore eyes on the TV there. And the courts are uglier. I've seen a lot of buzz about people, you know, being nostalgic over the old NBA Finals courts and the awesome Larry O'Brien trophy emblem that was, you know, around the team's logo at center court, and they keep messing it up, and the YouTube TV stuff looks ugly. Like, I get all that. I think my biggest pet peeve, and maybe it's just because they showed Mark Jackson on TV a couple times, like, I do just miss the old broadcast crew, the old A-team of, you know, Breen and Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. You never miss them more than when you're headed to a commercial break. I really do think that is where the modern NBA and the modern broadcast has lost me a little bit. There were so many opportunities, literally just last night, of hand down, man down, right? Or you're looking at a bad man. There were so many opportunities like that. Instead, we have Doris Burke just like speaking monotone over like a Sabrina Carpenter song as we head into commercial break. We used to have it really good. We didn't know we were in the good times until they're over, right? So I did just want to note that I've been a little frustrated that I get that the NBA Finals doesn't feel the same as it used to, but that's also just kind of comes with the territory of getting older. But I do think, just to put a bow on the NBA Finals as of right now, if you like basketball, then I shouldn't hear shit about the ratings, about people bitching about small markets, about the lack of stars, any of that. Just crumple it up, throw it out. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen next. Anybody that tells you they know what's going to happen next is lying to you. And the hoops is incredible, right? Two out of the three games, like, they're not all going to be perfect. It's a seven-game series. Basketball's up and down. A lot of variability, especially with the shooting in these games. We've gotten two out of three good games. You got to take that. And frankly, like, just because both teams are playing a similar style, they both want to play with pace. They both have really deep rosters. And again, we have role players just swinging games. Both teams are 10 deep. And any of these guys, with a couple made shots, with a couple big defensive plays, with a couple turnovers, can swing a matchup one way or another. We've already seen it through the first three games. You had Obi Toppin starting terribly in game one and then hitting five threes that helped propel the Pacers to a big win and even gave them the opportunity for Haliburton to hit that shot. And then in game two, it's like guys like Caruso and Aaron Wiggins, who we hadn't heard from all playoffs, combining for 40 points. That swings the game. And then, of course, last night, you have the TJ McConnell performance. You have damn near 30 points from Benedict Mathurin. We do not know what's going to happen next. And I know that these were not, well, at least with OKC, a lot of people expected them to be there, right? But we were not expecting to see Indiana. But either way, both of these teams are young. Both of these teams are well-coached. Both of these teams are in great situations. I think both of these teams are going to be in the mix for a while. Are they going to get back to the finals? Are they going to win multiple championships? Any of that shit? I have no idea. But consider this like a debut album for the Pacers or for the Thunder, right? Like, this is, you're going to be able to say if you watch this finals that you were there the first time Indiana made a real run and had a real shot at winning the whole thing. I know they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but they got swept. They had no shot last year. This year, they've proven they have a real shot. OKC, we know that they're going to be in the mix for a while, so enjoy this series while we have it. Extremely excited for Game 4, and we will talk more about the finals on Saturday. Real quick before I let you guys go, I did just want to touch on the other major storyline that's taken place since our last podcast. I did spend some time talking about where the Knicks and the Timberwolves were going to go after their losses in the conference finals. So we did spend some time talking about the Knicks and the Tom Thibodeau decision because there was buzz heating up that he might be fired. I didn't really understand it at the time. And then, like, I think the next day after I recorded that podcast, they ended up firing Tom Thibodeau. So let's start with that before we talk about the recent Knicks news over the past couple of days. I was surprised. I do not think the firing of Tom Thibodeau was fair, but I do see both sides of the argument, right? The side to keep him is obviously because he deserved to stay coach of the Knicks, right? You had an incredible season. You beat the defending champs, and it also meant a little bit more, I think, because of the Boston-New York thing and the rival markets and everything like that. You had the best Knicks season in decades. You gave the Pacers a great, very competitive six-game series that could have gone seven or even gone the other way if, you know, you don't have one of the most ridiculous comebacks in NBA history in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And now it makes the Knicks look even better. The Pacers are in the finals, actually having a chance to win it all. It'd be one thing to lose to the Pacers and they get steamrolled by OKC and show that they weren't even that close. The Knicks show that they're kind of close if you kind of look at it through the transitive property. So all those reasons, you kind of assume that Tibbs should still be the coach of the Knicks. The other side of the ball, I do get it to an extent, right? He is a flawed coach, right? He is very frustrating to watch at times. He puts way too much pressure and puts way too many minutes, too much of a load on his starters and his guys. He struggles to develop youth. I don't think his offense is always necessarily the most creative, right? I think the Knicks have an extremely talented offensive team. Now, solving their defensive issues is a whole other conversation, but on the offensive end of the court, you have an incredible on-ball creator in Brunson, one of the best in the NBA. Then you have this freak seven-footer that can drive to the hoop and also space the floor. And the fact that their offense was stagnant at times and they didn't necessarily do the best to get Cat involved, and it didn't seem like the pieces complemented each other that well, I think a lot of that can be blamed on Tibbs' offense. But ultimately, I think the reason why I sided to keep Tom Thibodeau is because the grass isn't always greener, and nobody understands that quite like the New York Knicks right now, because it is now looking even worse of a decision to fire Tom Thibodeau because of the headlines that have been made in recent days. It seems like their big plan, once they fired Tibbs, was to just steal somebody else's coach. They have asked the Houston Rockets to interview Ime Udoka for their head coaching position. They have asked the Dallas Mavericks to interview Jason Kidd for their position. They've asked the Wolves to interview Chris Finch for their coaching position. And they recently asked the Hawks to interview Quinn Snyder for their coaching position. That one was a little surprising. I didn't know Quinn was still desirable like that, but good for him. But all four of those teams told the Knicks to fuck off. They were like, absolutely not. go find your own coach, which is totally valid. I just think it is such a innately crazy move. Like, sure, I mean, I guess there's no harm in asking those teams. It's a little embarrassing when it comes out in public, like, hey, you know, they just tried to snake everybody else's coach. But for that to have been plan A, was like, we need to try Ime Udoka and all these other coaches, is just such a wild move. Like, it's almost like having a girlfriend, and don't use me for this example, I'm in a very happy relationship, but let's say you're with your girlfriend, right? Things are going well, they're not going perfect, but out of the blue, you just dump her, right? And your buddy comes up to you, like, hey, what happened there? I thought things were going well with you guys. Like, you know, why did you decide to break up with her? Well, I just wanted to shoot my shot at Jeff's girlfriend, right? She's great. Like, look at them over there. They look happy. And it's like, what the fuck? Your plan A can't just be to steal somebody else's good thing. And that's exactly what the Knicks did. Like, who do the Knicks think they are? You have these two stars that are great players, but are like nearly impossible to hide their defensive flaws, right? Like the CBA is coming for everybody. They're not necessarily extremely well set up to maintain this current cast. And you haven't won anything during really the entire lifetime of any of these coaches that are up for the job. So why did you think you were just going to be able to just like pry another coach away? I think it's crazy. But regardless, provided the Knicks are done striking out on coaches that are already happily employed, it does just kind of seem like the obvious candidates sitting there are the two guys that got laid off in the last week of the season, those being Mike Malone, the former Nuggets coach, and Taylor Jenkins, the former Grizzlies coach. Again, I'm not super in the weeds on coaching, so don't really know. And, you know, maybe Knicks fans would argue that's a lateral move, but Mike Malone has proven he won a championship, obviously, just 2 years ago with the Denver Nuggets, and Taylor Jenkins is pretty well respected around the league. So I'd imagine they could do a lot worse than those guys. It is kind of funny, like, it seems like in NFL circles, there's always, like, a new, like, wonder kid coming up, like, oh, the OC from Georgia, and now he's here, and now we know his name, and he's 30, and he's going to be a head coach soon. Like, there always seems to be, like, three guys in the rotation, and those guys almost always end up being, like, great NFL coaches during their first couple years, and we hear so much about them going in. Like, it just, maybe I'm just out of the loop. It doesn't feel like we're in that spot with basketball coaches. It seems like there's a lot more retread options. Seems like there's kind of known commodities at hand. So maybe the Knicks should just cut their losses and hire one of the two guys that got fired most recently. So that's going to do it for this podcast today. Probably took longer than I thought, considering I'm turning out another episode on Saturday. But that is how it goes sometimes. Really excited about this NBA Finals series. Like we talked about, bringing on my guy, Ian Kayanja. He is a massive NBA Thunder fan. He's been on this podcast before talking about the Thunder. We've been texting the past couple days. Ian's hot right now. He's a really good guy. One of the better guys I've really ever met, to be totally honest with you. And frankly, he's talking shit about Indiana. You know, I think he's still feeling really confident. We're going to see what his mood is looking like after game four. So excited to chop it up with him. Also, I know on some other NBA podcasts I've been listening to, there's a lot of offseason talk, right? It seems like at this point, KD's almost certainly going to get traded. Might be some shuffling atop the draft board. We're constantly on Giannis watch at this point. If somebody's going to pony up and ask him, is he going to stay in Milwaukee? And I think that the Wolves, Spurs, and Knicks are probably the teams that are most likely at this time to make some really big moves this offseason. So I'm excited about all that, but I am just waiting until after the NBA Finals. Obviously, if somebody's got a source or something comes across my desk, so to speak, I'm happy to talk about it in a little bit further detail on the podcast. But it does feel like that's all speculation at this point in time, and I just want to focus on the actual basketball being played. Before I let you guys go, be sure to follow At Words with Wallace on everything that includes Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts, and I will talk to you guys on Saturday. Peace.